and horrible things happen. You can't treat it. Our genitalia are not recreational vehicles. And yeah. I just, once in a, you've got to let the thing relax and let it down a little bit. It's a, well, therein lies another interesting sidebar to the adult performer's psychological profile. There is, within the within the adult entertainment industry, what I refer to as a sociological death wish. And it may have now a little bit physiological as well, but for the most part, when people come into this business, when I ask them why they're in the industry, why they're coming into the industry, if they tell me it's for money, I don't want any part of them. If they tell me it's for sex, then I guess I can accept that, although they're going to find out that the sex is unbelievably mechanical. But if they tell me it's for fame, glory, immortality, credibility, there's a person recently asked me, what's the one word that's most important to every single person, every living being, every creature, top and bottom? What's the one single most important word in anybody, in everybody's life, everything's life? What would you think that word would be?
Self.
Well, that's pretty good, but it's a little bigger than that. I and me is only you recognizing yourself. I believe that the most important word in the person's life is recognition, acknowledgement, validation, credibility. And what the X-rated industry does is it allows the person who's good at it to get the gold X in the middle of the forehead. How many people, I don't know if you've been to conventions, I don't know if you've seen the lines formed for my performers, for my kids, but to have them stand there and sign those autographs, to have them be recognized is, and again, what I'm doing now with you is my recognition, first step of, my first recognition of the day. There is nothing more important than recognition. An animal comes up to you and wants to be petted, recognition. A child looks up at you from the cradle and expects recognition. Same thing with my industry, but even more importantly, because a lot of the kids are very insecure, and this is their absolute and total way of validation.
And people want to be recognized for certain things that they like about themselves or that they want to see in themselves.
They want to be recognized for something they do better than anybody else, because it's my people do things better than anybody else.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the, as a fan or a viewer, I hope this comes out right. I want to say this the right way. But sometimes it's difficult to recognize that the performers are people, because the films are designed to be fantasy, and so you kind of enter into this. I was just, one reason I wanted to talk to you is I was hoping that you could give us some insight into that, into what the people who are involved with it are actually like as people once the cameras are turned off.
Well, I believe that there's nothing particularly special about them when the cameras are turned off, other than they're people who they live in a constant state of wanting to be recognized. Well, that's very dangerous also. But they are, again, and a lot of the people deny it when I bring up the overage juvenile delinquent. But it's interesting that one of the greatest of all, Vanessa Del Rio, when I was lecturing during the conference, there was a international conference or world conference of pornography in 1998 in San Fernando Valley, which right now is the center of the universe. And after I said the line about overage juvenile delinquent, she came up to me and said, "You're goddamn right I am." And that was so cool, because it absolutely, for somebody of that stature to agree with what I had to say. Most of them, in the long run, do agree, although they reluctantly agree. Some of them pretend to be more grown up than others, but way down deep, they know that when I say something like that, it's paying homage to them, because to me, I prefer 12-year-olds over 52-year-olds. I don't like people who grow up or take on the trappings of being grown up. That bothers me. Adults and I have never really gotten along, because adults mean they have to follow some rules that I just don't want to live by. I answer to myself, and that's it, and to my Himalayan cat. I have no one else I want to answer to, because I've chosen. I have my love and Viper. I have my great relationship. I don't expect to have another one, because I know how difficult I am to put up with. And I'm my own best company most of the time, and if I don't have company that way, I reach out to watching movies, and I review films for the LA Express. I'm a film reviewer. I've been a film reviewer longer than I've been in this business.
Mm-hmm.
And I love movies. And I have directed movies in this business. I've written, of course, I've acted in them, and I've criticized them. And now, as an activist, I talk about the business in an overall perspective of what I believe it is. And again, anybody wanting to come into this business, it's very... they got to understand that it's not going to go away. I keep on mentioning that more than anything else, just in case you have someone out there who's listening to this who might want to come into it. If they think that they're ready for this, then they're certainly welcome to get a hold of me at the bmargold@aol.com, but I will attempt to talk them out of it. They will not be allowed into it unless they can convince me that this is something that they understand will haunt them the rest of their life. This is another... the way I say it sounds evil, and I've had people condemn, oh, don't tell them that's going to haunt them because we want to take them apart. Well, I really don't need their conscience on mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I do warn people about what's going to happen. But if I find the right kind of person, a perfect example of that is this delightful kid, as I call them, all kids, walked up to me 3.5 years ago in Las Vegas. Her name was Sunny Lane, and I referred to her as the Shirley Temple of X. And she said, what do I do? And I said, the less you do, the more valuable you are. And I was on stage with Sunny a week ago at the Fox 2008 event, Fans of X-Rated Entertainment, another organization I created. And I said, she's the future of X. Now, maybe she is, maybe she isn't, and maybe she'll even cross over. Maybe she'll be accepted in the real world. She has a killer instinct that I have not seen for a long time, and I'm very proud of her. Maybe Sunny Lane will be what I refer to as basically we need a crossover person. If the real world wants us, she can be absorbed into it. She can be the person who transcends if she wants to transcend. But it's much more fun here, to be honest with you, because she's secure in who she is. Out there, they'll tear her apart. Viper got tired of the X-rated industry in 1988 and wandered over into the real world for a while and came back and told me it's much more vicious and mean-spirited there than it is here. See, I know my industry, which is an industry predicated on screwing, you're going to get fucked, basically. but you expect it. I don't know the level of language you're allowed to use on your show, so you'll edit where you want.
Mm-hmm.
But out there, that's all they do. It's not a nice world outside our own industry. It's not really a nice world in our industry, but it's a worse world out there, and I would not want any part of that. I meet the real world occasionally, and I'm amused by their ignorance. I'm also amused by their... basically, I've always said that a lot of people in the real world, it's an interesting image I want to paint for you, shake our hands as if they're extracting cat shit from a litter box with their teeth. There's something about the way they welcome us into their fold, which is so incredibly insincere, condescending, and solicitous, that I don't want to be in their fold. I really don't. Most of the time when I deal with the real world, it's with documentaries or radio shows or TV shows. I've stopped doing TV shows because they're just downright vicious and scandalous and they have no soul whatsoever. Radio has a little bit more soul to a certain extent because it's anonymous and the people who listen don't even have to admit they do. When I do Hysterect on Playboy, however, people do call in, and they call in with such tremendous gratitude for what we have provided for them. The memories we have given them, the masturbatory memories, the letters that I get from people who found me under their father's mattress, literally, and watched me or read about me or looked at pictures or learned about who I was, and they're thanking me for things that happened 30 years ago. And that's beyond any kind of recognition I could ever want in my life. It's so gratifying, and it's so, basically, the way I answer when people say, my God, you're Bill Margold, and I said, yeah, what an honor to talk to you. And I said, no, it's an honor to talk to you, because without you, I wouldn't be me. Mm. Now, I do have a very famous business card that says, God created man, William Margold created himself. And that is, I think, the greatest business card of all time. I don't do things in half measure, but it's a crock of shit. Without the fan, I would not be me. And I created an organization called FOXE, Fans of X-Rated Entertainment, which is based on, if society refuses to admit that it's jacking off, it shouldn't be upset when Congress cuts off its dick. Because up to that point, the fan had taken and taken and taken and given nothing back. So I created an organization in 1989 that demanded that the fan put up or shut up. And at one point, Fox had almost 2,000 members, but now, again, with the facility of the material, it's so easy and so common, it's not as exciting anymore for the fan to admit that they're part of a unique group. So everything ends, nothing's forever, and eventually, the performer, the adult industry, I believe will be absorbed into the mainstream. I can't see it not being absorbed into the mainstream, but it probably won't be in my lifetime, because who knows how much more lifetime I have. I think now I'll be 65, October 2nd, and I've gotten everything I've ever wanted out of life, with the exception of one thing, and that's the Detroit Lions in the Super Bowl. Seems horribly insignificant, but if you've suffered for 50 years, you'll know what I'm talking about. Oh, a bad team. Real bad team. I'm a Yankee fan, though, so it's made up for it. I love the Yankees, but the Lions are my passion, and I would trade everything that the Yankees have done for one Lions Super Bowl championship.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. I don't know why you say that.
Well, I'm a Panthers fan, so.
Well, you got there a couple of times.
Our team has only been in existence for 10 years, so there's still hope. But
you have the great advantage of having a team for your whole lifetime that's been around for your whole lifetime.
Yeah.
You've grown up with them. And you got there, you should have won, but you didn't. And who knows what's going to happen. But hope springs eternal, or falls eternal, because it starts in the fall again. And as I always say, when the season's over, tomorrow is September.
Yeah. Going back to adult movies for a little bit, you've probably been asked this question a lot. I hope you don't mind answering it again. But
whatever you like.
What is it like to be on set when one of these films is being made? I think that's something that a lot of people, because what we see on screen, obviously, that's a production. What is it really like to be there, and what is it like as a performer and just any kind of inside baseball insight that you could give us?
Well, it's on a real set, not just a toss-together amateur movie. It's a lot of work, and I enjoy it. I look forward to it, and I like to do everything. I am not a person who takes my position in this business particularly serious. I have always loved throwing out trash. So I love throwing away things. I like cleaning up. I like set decorating. And I really like to feel that I've accomplished something when it's all over with. But for a male performer, much more difficult than a female performer, the analogy is bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, full count, and you can't foul off a ball. My policy is I get myself up. I don't let anybody touch me until I have to work. Now, I haven't done a hardcore sex scene since 2000, because there's been no challenge, and when it became legal, a lot of the fun went out of it, because it just wasn't as exciting anymore. I wasn't getting away with anything, and most of the fun for me was getting away with something. But the male performer is a unique animal who must function, or he fails. And a failure is not tolerated in our business very long. You disappear. So the performance is, they call it getting wood, which of course is the analogy I give to the baseball situation. You've got to lay down at least a bunt in order to get through the scene. It's very difficult. I was very fortunate that I was good at it. only because I became somewhat mechanical and could get up, get in, get out, get off on cue. I was paid. I was paid for a pop shot. I discovered very early on that I was not having sex with the woman. I was having sex with myself. That if I let the woman take over the scene, I was utterly worthless. So I did it. I became almost inanimate, more automatonistic, in a sense that I admit that I was never very really good at sexual act because I'm clumsy, I'm big, I'm lumbering. I'm known as a bear for many reasons, and one of them is my somewhat lack of sensuality. I sort of don't move well. Multiple concussions on football field helped add to that. But I'm big and I'm almost brutal in my sexuality, not intentionally, but because I really don't know what I'm doing. I was never really taught by anybody very good about what sex is all about. I just see a hole and I fill it. And my primary goal is to get off in a scene because that's what you want to see, the ejaculation into the face of a beautiful woman, which I refer to as vicarious revenge against all the cheerleaders you couldn't get when you were in high school. Now, there's nothing wrong with that in the term vicarious revenge. Since you mentioned your beloved Panthers, when you go to your football game and you see an extremely violent play, you get a vicarious visceral release from that play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you wouldn't want to be part of that play because you'd be carted off on a stretcher.
Right.
But see, I speak from that experience too because I was fortunate enough to play football for 20 years and I had an awful lot of fun out there.
Mm-hmm.
But everything in my body is a disaster now. My knees no longer are interested in being part of my body. My ribs have been aching for 30 years. My hands sound like broken walnuts, but I'd go back out and play again. But when I am able to do that on the screen, I know that I'm doing it for 10,000 men who are watching. And that is fantastic. So for a male to perform, that's why there's so few of them. You probably can hold your hands up and look at them and count the 10 men that you know historically in this business.
Yeah.
And you've filled almost all lists of the famous performers, male. Female performing is very, very difficult in the sense that you have to be on at all times. Not up, but on, because the eyes don't lie. It all begins and ends in the eyes, quite frankly, because the eyes are the window to the heat in the soul. And if you're looking at a pair of dead eyes, you're not going to be interested in jacking off to what's going on inside the rest of that person. But if those eyes are on fire, then you're going to be dragged in through those eyes into the rest of that person's physiological being. And that's fantastic. That's why the great ones, in my opinion, the greatest of all of them, without a doubt, was a woman named Tori Wells. I don't think there's ever been a hotter person, and hotter is sort of a trite way of putting it, a more incendiary person in the history of this business than Tori Wells. Tori Wells, the great performers have what I refer to as camera magnetism ingredients, animal magnetism ingredients. Tori had animal camera magnetism that transcended anybody I've ever seen in this business, and I believe Tori had something primal about her. I think if you DNA'd Tori, you'd find prehistoric animal tissue inside of her. There's something about Tori that was so magnetic and so compelling that she never let her guard down on camera and just ripped through people. Prejudiciously, I would like to say that Viper had that, but Viper, of course, was horribly handicapped by a tattoo that was from tip to clip in an era where tattoos were not acceptable. I don't even like them now. I can't really stand tattoos. But then, a tattoo to me is like a raisin in a snowball. And Viper's tattoo was like 10 boxes of raisins and a monumental snow man or snow woman. And you couldn't not see it, and that, of course, tragically placed her in a position of being an outlaw, which, of course, I liked, but not accepted within the family. And after 5 years, even though she went out and bought tits, which drove her crazy, and that's another phenomenon we can talk about, implant schizophrenia, which nobody wants to listen to, because the human body should not be penetrated by anything but a piece of meat. She vanished. Now, there's a very famous image that I want people to go and look at called Fighting for Your Freedom, or Freedom Isn't Free. It's the, and maybe you've seen it, maybe you haven't, of the ladies raising the American flag. Are you familiar with that image?
No, I haven't seen that.
Well, go to barelydecent.com on my website, or go straight to it. My website, by the way, is Bill Margold, BillMargold.com. And on my website, off in the corner, is barelydecent.com, BarelyDecent.com, or barelydecententertainment.com. I designed, I created a very famous image back in 1991 that is basically the Iwo Jima shot done with women in it. And it's, of all the things I've ever done, is my proudest image, proudest creation, because that will be eternal beyond anything else I've ever done. And I'm very proud of that. I present it. But 4 days after we did that shot, she vanished. Now, maybe she'll hear this show, and that'll be nice, because I talk about her. The only person I talk about more than me is her. So that'll give you some idea of how much I miss her and how much I thought of her.
Well, and just in...
Remarkable. She was way ahead of her time. She'd been a Marine for 6 years. She'd been a member of the American Ballet Theater. She'd been a hooker on the block in Baltimore. And when she came into my life, you only get one special person in your life, and she was beyond special. And everything I do the rest of my life is sort of dedicated to her, because I was allowed to have her or be with her for 5 years. But the adult performer is not a person to be contained or controlled. I basically look at them as mercury in the middle of my hand. And if you close your hand on mercury, it runs out your fingers. But if the mercury in the middle of your hand becomes comfortable in the middle of your hand, it might rest there for a while. But you cannot own or control or contain an adult performer. They belong to the world, absolutely and totally.
You haven't... I in some of the reading that I did to prepare for this, it's obvious that she was very important to you and that you loved her a lot. And then...
I liked her more than I loved her. That's the whole thing. Love was insignificant to the amount of like I had for her. It was more admiration and awe. I've always said that I was in awe of Viper, and I really was, because she was remarkable.
Do you think that she was partially a victim of her time? Do you think if she came along today that people might appreciate her look and her talents more?
I think they would, because the tattoo would be accepted now.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that this industry, unfortunately, Viper now, because the industry is no longer unique, would not stand out. Whereas then she stood out when she could, because the industry was still basically unique itself. This was 86 to 91.
Mm-hmm.
17 years later, Viper would just be another tattooed redhead, and then if she went and got the tits, she'd be another tattooed redhead with phony tits. I don't think there's projects worthy of Viper now, where at least while Viper was in the business, certain things were designed to utilize her talents, and she was given real movies to be in, the great Hustler movie, the Mystery of the Golden Lotus, Voodoo Lust, Midnight Fire. She was given roles specifically written to her, for her, and of course, she was a wonderful actress. And like I say, to watch Viper work, the Immoral series, which Viper and I created, which was the first adult entertainment industry soap opera, to create the role for her and then to somewhat direct her through the role. But Viper, like I, was certainly not directable. Viper got into a role and then you just sort of left her alone. I am not an actor. I am not directable. And ironically, I won an award for Best Actor of the Year, but I had no idea what I was saying. The dialogue was so overwhelming that my mind sort of went nuts trying to figure it out, and I went nuts, and they thought it was a performance. But to this day, I can't tell you what that movie, a thing called Dark Side, was about. I don't know what I was doing in that film, and yet they thought it was acting. Oh, what a great performance. I said, but I don't know what I'm talking about, and I don't like to not know what I'm talking about. I'm very good at playing me. I don't think anybody could ever play Bill Margold, because I am quite pompous, and for lack of a better term, I've been referred to many times as an asshole, but as I retaliate immediately, it's far better to be an asshole than a whole ass. Because when you're an asshole, you're the center of attention, and I thrive on being the center of attention. If you don't think I'm having fun with you right now, I'm having the time of my life, because I know that I'm being immortalized one more time. I'd love to get a copy of this, by the way, or find out where this goes, and I hope, I don't know what you exactly do with this show, but I hope you get reactions, and I'd like to know what those reactions are, because I will write about those reactions in one of my columns. I want to trace the life of this show to see where it goes. I do, like I say, a lot of shows, a lot of documentaries, and I just have a, I like to collect my archives, because I can regurgitate them over and over and over again. Well, I've written about my actions so many times. So where exactly does this show you're doing wind up?
Well, we have a free radio station in Asheville, North Carolina, and then it's posted on a couple of internet web pages where other stations get their shows from, so other stations have the options of picking it up. My most popular shows will get about 500 downloads. So I'm hoping that with maybe your name recognition, a little extra publicity, this one should be able to surpass that. But I'm definitely going to do a lot to make sure that people hear it.
Well, I also hope that people at your other shows who pick it up, one of them might want to call me. I'm not beyond talking. I love to talk about what I've done. I love to talk about what I believe in. And if you don't like what I say, then turn me off. This is a launching pad into who knows where. Yeah. I would like my own show called the ABCs of XXX, where I could sit and talk for 3 hours in the dark. I think radio is the most of all, the most fun you can have is on a radio show, because you're sitting in the dark talking to people. And it gives them the cloak of anonymity, so they don't have to be on television. I tend to upset people too easily, because I don't play fair. I don't shake the hands of my enemies. I don't like losing. I have enough of that with the Lions. So I go in to win and make my point. And I really go in to disturb people and rattle their cages. And their cages are fragile. I destroy their cages because they want to prove that they know more than me about the adult entertainment industry, or think that they're going to damn me. They're welcome to, but I can damn them right back, and I don't play fair. So on television, it's not as much fun. On radio, you get all the cranks, or sometimes you get the people who care, and I love talking to them. And again, it's the anonymous chamber that you can climb into. When I do Hysterex for the hour a month on Playboy, I get a chance to get into that, and sometimes they notice my eyes are closed because I'm trying to visualize who I'm talking to and where I'm at, and I get a big kick out of that. I think radio would be my perfect medium if I ever get a chance to do something like that on a regular basis, because radio, every call is different.
And it's interesting to discuss film on radio, because we're dealing with a more visual medium, and radio doesn't have the visual component is supplied by the listener's imagination. So when you're talking about pictures or movies.
And I love film. I'm mainstream film. I was raised in watching it. I can talk film. Film and sports are my two specialties, particularly pro football. I know a lot about baseball, but pro football is, I said, my passion. And after the suffering I've done, I've been embedded in it for so long. And I had the great fortune to be given opportunities by the Lions that most people don't get. I have a team ball for my 40th birthday, and I was snuck onto the sideline in Anaheim in 1993 by Sports Illustrated. So as I said, it was like losing my virginity the second time. There is nothing like being on the sideline of a pro football game. I'm a big person. I'm about roughly 6'2" and about 240 pounds, and I'm built big. I have almost 20-inch neck and 39-40-inch arms, and I'm sort of a mess physically because everything went wrong, but standing next to them, I felt like a dwarf. And then almost getting killed by one of them as I was mesmerized, as a tight end was coming toward me and the ball was coming toward me, If he had hit me, I was dead. And they sound like they're wearing armor. They clank out there. It was a very interesting experience. And luckily, the Lions, for me, they won. They don't win very much, but they won the game. And it was also, and I must have lost 10 pounds of nervous sweat weight. I was running around with a huge camera, trying to look like I knew what I was doing out there, but I had no idea what I was doing out there. And it was so much fun. I don't know if I'd want to do it again, because, like I said, it was like losing my virginity for the second time in my life, and I'm not altogether sure I want to lose my virginity anymore. I remember losing my virginity wasn't much fun in the first place, so that was a mess. It was in October of 1963, and it was like six times the same night. What a bore. Jeez. All on the withdrawal method, by the way. So pull out and get off, pull out and get off. Maybe start a training me for this business. But
I was going to say, it's good practice.
What a disaster. Ugh.
There were two more things that I especially wanted to ask you about, and one of them, both of them you've touched on. But one of them is your sort of mainstream film criticism career.
Well, I love movies. I absolutely love film. Film was my babysitter. I used to walk in the theaters and never come out. I'd just disappear in the theaters and see the same movie two times, three times a day. It's hard to believe that at a point in time in my life I was an introverted child. I did not become extroverted until I saw my first byline. Journalism extroverted me. And, of course, I came into this business to be the George Plimpton of pornography, which, of course, as you know, ties into the Detroit Lions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I gave George, when I had the fortune of meeting him in 1997, I handed him my card, which, of course, the colors are silver and blue. And if you email me with information about yourself, I'll send you a card and whatever else you might like. Because you didn't email an address or anything.
I will.
I said to George, who looked at my card, and I said, you know, George, I've been you for 25 years in this business. He said, well, that's nice. I said, but look at the colors of the car, George. And he goes, oh, that's our team. And I got all excited. And he said, well, son, I think we'll talk. So he called me a few months later. We talked for a couple of hours. And he did an article about me in Men's Journal that said that I had relieved him of that responsibility by being him in this business. And that was so cool.
That is, he was a fantastic writer.
Well, he was fantastic because he allowed, he was a fan, he wrote about what you dreamt about.
Mm.
And of course, Paper Lion, how, there are no accidents in life. And had Plimpton perhaps written about the Carolina Panthers, which didn't even exist, who knows if I would even known who he was.
Yeah.
But he wrote about the Lions. And it was an amazing, everything tied together and tied together and tied together. So I came into this business to be the George Plimpton of pornography. It's, you know, getting back to your comment about film reviewing. Paper Lion was released as a film in 1968. And I remember reviewing it. I did review it, of course. And I sent the Lions a copy of it. So they invited me to practice. They were practicing at Hollywood High. They were playing the Rams out here. And I remember meeting the PR man. And he said, why the Lions? And I told him the sad story of how I became a Lion fan, which is very sad. I got out of juvenile hall when I was 13 and was placed in an orphanage, semi-orphanage, for somewhat troubled Jewish children named, it was called Vista Del Mar. And I was labeled an incorrigible, which caught up with me a few years later when I tried to get the Marines and then the Navy. They wouldn't take me because of my incorrigibility. And I was in the locker room where the kids played games, and they were throwing or tossing or flipping football cards. Now remember, I was a very introverted child. I'd never seen a football card. I was really sort of a, I'm still a nerd, and I'm very square because I don't do drugs, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't party, I live a very, I guess, ordinary lifestyle because I don't go to parties unless I'm the center of attention, so that ends that. Never done a drug, but the drug taking has reasons beyond the normal for why I don't do drugs, because I've seen death many times. When I worked in juvenile hall, I saw kids die from overdoses.
Mm.
And that sort of sobers you up right off the bat. Plus, I don't like to think what drugs might do to me, because it might unlock a couple of the souls that I know exist in me that I don't want to deal with. I don't drink not because I don't want to, but because I'm a psychosomatic drunk. Hmm. I get drunk on one drink, and that's then I lose control, and I never like losing control as well as I am. So leading this sort of ordinary life, the Lions, they're throwing these cards on the ground, and there are like hundreds of cards on the ground, and a guy, one of the kids said to me, if you pick up all the cards, we'll give you a card. So, of course, I'm trying to be accepted into this group of kids. So I said, oh, sure. So I pick them all up, and he hands me a football card, and I have it sitting on my shelf to this day, Bobby Lane, Detroit Lions. Now, I didn't know much about anything at that point in time, particularly pro football, but by December, I heard a radio show where Bobby Lane got injured, and I said, oh, I think that's the guy I like. But I still wasn't sure I liked the Lions until I went to a Pro Bowl game, and there was a guy out there playing named Yale Larry. Defensive back, intercepts two passes, Detroit Lions, Lane, Larry, Lions, I was hooked. And it's been a nightmare. it's something that I wouldn't wish upon an enemy. But like I say, they've given me, and in fact, at the practice, the PR man, a very nice guy named Lyle Smith, said to me, well, if there's anything you ever want, kid, just give me a call. So I figured, oh, well. I waited a couple of years. I was working in juvenile hall. I said, I want to make a pilgrimage. So I called Lyle Smith, and I said, if I come back to Detroit, can you get me tickets to the game? He said, hell, I'll put you in the press box. So I go back to Detroit in November of 1970, and I'm up in the press box, and we won the first game on a Sunday. But then on Thanksgiving Day, which was so cool, we're losing 14-0 immediately against the Raiders. And my idol at that point in time, my first idol was Yale Larry. He's in the Hall of Fame. My second idol was Lem Barney, who was one of the great defensive backs in the history of pro football. And within 3 or 4 minutes, we're down 14-0. Blitnikoff takes out Larry twice, catches two touchdowns. So I get up in the press box, which is a dismal place, wooden, cold. This is November in Detroit. And I'm not used to this kind of weather. I live in California, and I'm now turning blue up there. Wind's howling through the place. So I wander down to the end of the press box, and there's this older gentleman, roly-poly man, sitting there mumbling to himself. And he says, God damn, Barney, reading his press line. He's reading his headlines. And I realized it was a man named Night Train Lane, very famous defensive back for the Lions. And I just sort of stood there in awe, and he began, well, he's calling sort of the defensive signals, but he was also, like, narrating the game, and he was, you know, talking to the sideline, and I'm listening to this guy, you know, I'm just watching, and we won the game, by the way, 28-14, and there's some great stuff in that game, including a moment where the word cocksucker went out over national television. After Ben Davidson knocked Mel Farr out of bounds and then jumped on him, Mike Lucci yelled across at the dishes where they could hear everything, you cocksucker, and then went out over national television. And everybody in that booth turned a very strange color. Again, you know, those things get everything. And then one of the most heartwarming moments of the game, and I never sat down, by the way. I figured I should not sit down in the presence of Train, as he was just babbling the whole time. I couldn't understand a lot of what he was saying, but occasionally look and smile at me as we began to win. That was the era where George Blanda would come off the bench and wander into a game and pull the game out for the Raiders. So Blanda wanders into the game, and by this time it was way too late, but he does what he can, but nothing much happens. And as he's walking off, it was the most beautiful moment. Wayne Walker says to him, Wayne Walker was another Detroit Lion linebacker, says to him, not today, old man. And it was so, you could hear it, you know, clear as a bell up in the press box. And I felt like I was part of an alumni or part of another family. Pro football means a lot to me. The home I grew up in, this is Del Mar, had a gentleman who was sort of the overall house father to all the kids. He was a very famous pro football player named Milt Davis. Milt Davis had been drafted by the Lions, but the Lions had too many defensive backs, so he wound up on a team called the Baltimore Colts and wound up setting a record that has not been broken yet. In the 45 games that he played in pro football, he intercepted 27 passes.
Wow.
There's been no defensive back to match that record. He also played in what is considered the most famous game of all time, the sudden death game in 1958. Mm-hmm. And Milt is one of those kind of people that is bigger than life that you look up to, and it was an inspiration. It's interesting, though, that when we had a reunion for Milt, everybody got up and said how he was inspired by Milt. Then I got up, and of course I'm in the X-ray industry, and I said, I'm not altogether sure that I can thank you for what I became. And he just said, oh, Billy Marvel. It was so cute because I, of course, wound up being the black sheep out of that, I guess, marginal pink sheep, perhaps, out of the this at El Mar. But pro football, again, we went off on all kinds of tangents here, but the reason I talk about pro football with such an adoration is because pro football, professional sports, are absolutely analogous to adult entertainment industry performing. The amount of pressure that we're under for the public pleasure is beyond fathomable ability. It's something that you have to understand that this is the real thing, and you can't fumble the ball. You can't strike out. You've got to make the play. Now, getting back to film reviewing, I was raised in movie theaters, and one good thing about my mother, she took me and made me watch movies, and then I fell in love with film. My favorite films, two favorite films of all time, and I can't separate them because one is a child, which is High Noon, and one is an adult, which is The Wild Bunch, are both movies that are about the four most important words in my life: truth, honor, loyalty, and friendship. And they're both about truth, honor, loyalty, and friendship. Those are the cornerstones of my life. You notice that the word love is not in there.
Mm-hmm.
Truth, honor, loyalty, friendship. And both movies are about that. Are about that. Cooper, Gary Cooper, who probably none of your listeners even know who he was, Gary Cooper was my first screen idol. And I never got to really meet him, but in 1961, while I was working at the Riviera Country Club as a caddy, because, as I said, the Marines wouldn't take me when I was 17, and the Navy wouldn't take me when I was 8 because of my incorrigibility, I was leaving. It was like a March afternoon. It was cold, sort of cold, and I was walking down the hill to sign out, and all of a sudden, on the clubhouse porch, Gary Cooper walks out. And it's one of those pictures in my mind that if I close my eyes, I can see it as if it was today, an hour ago. Sun was setting, of course, in the north corner of California, over his shoulder. So, of course, he was now 6'5", surrounded by a glow. And I'm looking up at him, and the sun, of course, is pouring down into my eyes as it's setting. And I was so overwhelmed that I could not run up and genuflect or worship accordingly. I just sort of stood there, and he stood there. And I'm not even sure now, in retrospect, that he even knew I was looking up at him, but he was very comfortable there. Now, I then, of course, signed out at the Caddyshack and walked down the hill, and I do this occasionally. I cry. I'm not ashamed to admit that I cry. And I cried and cried and cried. Now, and of course, within 2 months, he was dead from cancer. I didn't know that, but it sort of hurts. So even now, as I say it, tears are welling up because I didn't get to pay my affections to him.
Mm-hmm.
My next screen idol was from The Magnificent Seven, and that's James Coburn. And I'd always wanted to meet Coburn, but I never had a chance, and it never worked out. But finally, for a tribute to Elmer Bernstein, Coburn showed up at the Academy Theater in Beverly Hills, and I have a picture that United Artists sent me of Coburn throwing the knife from Magnificent Seven. Hopefully you've seen the movie and know what I'm talking about. And I had the picture of a nice little plastic container, and I took it up to him as he was leaving the theater, and I said, "Sir," and I held out the picture, and he looked at it, and he smiled, but his secretary said, "You can't." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, and I looked, his hands were like gnarled. He couldn't sign anymore. So I walked out of the Academy and I cried. Within 2 months, he was dead. But I'm not ashamed to admit that I cry.
Right.
I think crying is sort of cool because it cleans out the eyes, if nothing else. But I've had great moments where I've had a chance to meet most of my idols, meet most of the people. There are not many left that I really do want to meet. There are not many things, like I said, that I'd really like to do. One of the things I wanted to do, and I sort of got it, but then didn't get it, my favorite TV show of all time is Hill Street Blues. It's the greatest show in history, although my favorite show of all time is The Simpsons, which, ironically, Clinton was on just before he died, and I would like to be on The Simpsons. I'd like to be a voice. And The Simpsons, by the way, if you are a fan of The Simpsons, has a great acknowledgement to the X-rated industry in it. I don't know if you're aware of that. Maybe you're not a Simpsons fan.
Well, no, I've watched it a lot, but I'm not. Probably when I was watching it, I wasn't aware enough about the industry to recognize the allusions they were making.
Well, if you're a real Simpsons fan, or maybe you're not, do you know the name of the adult theater in The Simpsons?
No.
Springfield?
No, I'm not.
Okay. The name of the adult theater is the Aztec. Now, the name of the most famous adult theater in L.A. was the Lion. And that's so cool. Also, there's something about The Simpsons I just suddenly realized. Boy, I go off on tangents, so you've got to rein me in. But the most wonderful thing about The Simpsons for me, personally, although it's a very strange character, is that in among the very first videos I ever did was a thing called Superwear Party. This was back in 1979, 1980. And I play a character. It's called Superwear Party. It's a half-hour video.
Okay.
And it's really cool, and I wound up directing it because the guy who was directing the video got sick, so I wound up directing the video. And I play a character named Lionel Smithers. And you've got to wonder if maybe Groening, Matt Groening, somewhere along the line didn't see it, because who is Mr. Burns' assistant?
Yeah.
Lionel Smithers.
Huh.
Isn't that amazing?
That's crazy.
And it only recently dawned on me when I was researching that I play a character named Lionel Smithers. Now, Lionel Smithers is probably a quite common name for obsequious toadies. But, of course, in that movie, I am an obsequious toady, only up to the point where when my boss, played by Mike Ranger, another one of my great male discoveries, can't go do the job, I'm sent off to bring the superware to none other than Seika and Jennifer West. But, you know, think of the similarities. And again, like I say, the movie reviewing, I started reviewing films when I was in high school, junior college, and then, of course, I wrote for the Santa Monica Evening Outlook. I reviewed films, got a few quotes, which were amusing.